in the political section.
Oh, God.
If you can mention any names or remember any names in particular.
My boss was Vic Thompson. There were, you know, I'm trying to think, it's been a long time. Ann Swift, Tom Ahern, God. John Limbert, and about two or three others. The name's just escaping right now.
Mm-hmm. In general, how knowledgeable was this group about the Iranian scene?
Some of them very. Ann Swift was new, but she had studied Persian for a year before coming here. Mm-hmm. John Limbert was extremely knowledgeable. He had lived in Iran for about 10, 15 years. Mm-hmm. Spoke perfect Persian, had an Iranian wife. Let's see, Vic Thompson had already lived in Iran for 3 years at this point. He had been the consul down in Shiraz. I had lived in Iran at this point for about 5.5 years, including Peace Corps, and Tom Ahern was new, but again, you know, learning. It's probably, you know, I'd say all in all, it was a darn good political section.
But did all of them have Farsi skills of some sort or the other? Or?
Basically, yes. Uh-huh. But of course, you know, even going through school to learn Persian doesn't teach you to speak it. You have to be there for a while. Uh-huh. And the Farsi skills ranged from okay to very good. Which was basically the way it was at the rest of the embassy, too. But a fair number of people in the post-revolution embassy, mm-hmm. a fair number spoke good Persian. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Including three former Peace Corps volunteers, myself, John Limbert, and Barry Rosen. The Peace Corps volunteers from Iran. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Well, Rosen spent time as a volunteer, I know. Yeah. I have a couple more questions about some of the revolutionaries that you had contacts with. Were some of these people men or women you had met over the years?
Yeah, some I had known from, you know, back in 1970. Uh-huh. Others I had met at dinner that night. Mm-hmm. So it was a combination of people I had known from early days in the Peace Corps up through people I was meeting, mm-hmm. right, you know, for the first time.
Did your contacts include people who are members of the Fedayeen or the Mujahideen? Did your contacts include people who are members of the Fedayeen or the Mujahideen?
Mujahideen, yes.
Yeah. What kind of attitude did they have towards the U.S.? If you can it's possible to generalize about that.
It's rough to generalize. Everything from the United States is responsible for everything the Shah ever did because he was a puppet of the United States, to the United States is responsible and I want to go to Texas. Can you help me get a visa? Don't forget that there were a fair number of them who, you know, including the most anti-American, who had lived for long periods in the United States. And always distinguished in their own minds in a very Persian categorical way between the country of the United States with its people and its lifestyle versus the government. They had no problems with the country or the lifestyle and wanted, in many cases, to come back as soon as possible and resume an American lifestyle.
Among those who were hostile to the United States government, did they still? Did they therefore conclude that an accommodation was impossible, or do they think that accommodation should be developed nevertheless?
Everything. You had every combination of attitudes you could possibly think of. Yeah. Those who wanted all imperialist, quote-unquote, powers out to, you know, those who wanted business as usual and bring back your, you know, your companies and your technicians as soon as possible, please.
Over the course of the years, the Iran-American Society had played a significant role in Tehran and other cities in terms of training, giving English language lessons, cultural exchange, and so forth.
It was a you know,
and it had some presence.
It had presence. Yeah. I don't know how significant the role was. I wouldn't want to exaggerate it. There were lots of institutes that taught English or German or French or Italian. There were English high schools, just as there were French, Italian, German high schools. There were universities that taught in English. And the Iran-American societies in a couple of different cities have been very active.
Yeah. Did they continue their activities after the revolution?
After the revolution, let me think. Yes, because Kate Koop, who was one of the hostages taken in November of 79, was the head of the Iran-American Society in Tehran. How active was the programming after that? I think not very. It was not a time to be propagandizing about the United States.
This is occurred before the hostage crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But they still continued their English language lessons and so forth.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
I really don't recall right now. Not in Tabriz, not in Kermanshah, I suspect not in any of the provincial towns. I'm just not positive. It's certainly not in those places.
Now, after the February occupation of the embassy, I guess from what I understand, there was an American embassy committee which provided security for the embassy.
There were at least three.
Three different committees?
Yes, it was wonderful. You had one third of the American embassy compound taken over by Air Force Homophars, Air Force, you know, personnel. You had, they were living in a former barracks on the embassy compound. Excuse me. There was another group which had been sent to the embassy on February 14th by either, well, one group was sent by Yazdi, who was then the Minister of Foreign Affairs. Another was sent by the Comité system in the neighborhood. The Yazdi group occupied the ambassador's residence. It was led by somebody who was using the pseudonym Reza Farahani. It was a pseudonym. I'd forgotten what his real name was, although I did know it at one point. They basically occupied the bottom floor of the ambassador's residence and were in theory responsible for protecting the ambassador's house. We also, of course, had American Marines staying 24 hours at the ambassador too. There was a third group led by the later infamous Mashallah Kashani, who with his brother had a large group of really thugs, I mean interesting, you know, picaresque thugs from South Tehran. Mashallah was a former butcher, and the group that was with him were all members of the same sports club, etc., in his particular alley in South Tehran. The three groups fought. They fought physically, they fought with guns against each other for control of the compound. This went on for weeks. So that late at night, there'd be bullets whizzing across the embassy compound as one group was shooting at the other. This was really interesting.
Well, these are the same people who had occupied the embassy on the 14th?
No, in theory, who knows?
Yeah.
You know, God knows.
Yeah.
May have been, yeah. And some of them might have just stayed.
Yeah.
But of the group, the Air Force group would change every second day or so, and they would show up, driven in Air Force buses, normally chanting death to America. When they arrived, they were interesting. They were finally driven off the compound by the other two groups. But, this was really a circus. It was a three-ring circus. And we tried to carry on in the middle of it all as though nothing were happening.
The state of affairs persisted until the fall? Or?
No, eventually, the Mashallah group that was headquartered down at the main gate eventually drove off by beating up physically the other group that was in the ambassador's residence. The Ambassador's Residence Group also really had no reason to stay very long, because once the ambassador was taken out of, you know, was sent back to the States or left for the States, they really had no raison d'etre left. But they were pretty badly mauled before that. It was a much weaker physically group. And they were smaller guys and not part of the sports club scene, not street tough, you know, and they got pretty badly smashed.
Did the Moshpa group have any particular political perspective? Or?
Oh, I'd say they claimed to be very Islamic, but they were really rather hypocritical about it. I mean, they confiscated liquor to sell or to drink. They were heavily into bribes. They did a fair amount of house looting and were visibly involved in torture of people they got, things like that. I mean, it was a really vicious little group. They were eventually driven away through the machinations of a couple of other groups in the area. It was all. It was, you know, just really interesting to watch this. This was the revolution in microcosm. A lot of self-interest, a dash of ideology, some religion, a lot of thievery, corruption, and some pure revolutionary spirit, too. A lot of it anti-American, a lot of it pro-American. Let me give you an idea of the sort of thing that went on. I remember this because I just got a postcard from this guy the other day. I still had it sitting on the desk there, asking me to call him up. A couple of our embassy officers, a couple of the consular officers, were picked up one night when they were returning back to the embassy compound. This would be in the summer of 79. Picked up and held by some revolutionary guards. They were held in one of the committee headquarters. Then they were released when they proved they were indeed American diplomats. Well, the next day, the head of the group that had picked them up, a member of the new Revolutionary Guard, you know, the Revolutionary Guard was forming at this point, and this was a member, one of the new officials in it, called up, and he wanted to talk to someone at the embassy about this incident. I was asked to handle it. Well, he wanted to keep the, you know, other embassy officers out of this, and the ones who'd been picked up especially, just remove them totally already, to try and distance them and make him forget about them. So I met with him. Turned out to be a very pleasant person. You know, he was bearded and tough looking and carried guns and all this sort of stuff, but very decent, pleasant. We hit it off. He invited me to his house for dinner. I went for dinner. Well, I asked him why he had picked up the diplomats. Why had he tried to arrest them? They said, oh, it was simple. He said, I wanted to meet some Americans. I said, I figured it was the best way. He showed me his bedroom he and his brother shared. And this is a family of, you know, really lower class. Nice, decent people. Lower class family. Nothing in the house at all. His bedroom was decorated totally with American flags. Anyway, how do you explain this?
Well, maybe not that we should stop. Very interesting.
Yeah, he got political asylum in Germany about 2 years later. He defected from the Revolutionary Guard Corps. I should give him a call.